Joining me right now for episode 29 of The Juicy Details, he's a former ECW star. He trained at ECW. He's been all over the place, such as WWE, TNA, even XPW, if you remember that company. Please welcome Danny Dorton. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First question I have, I usually ask a basic question, but I got to know, where did the Sugar Mask persona come from? Because, you know, that's your Twitter handle, Sugar Mask, and you have the mask on. And
I get that a little bit. It's just something I always wanted to come up with. I was always intrigued by, like, masked wrestlers. I always, when I was a kid, growing up, I always, like, you know, loved the whole mystique behind it and everything. And there was nothing I could have done. When I was training in the House of Hardcore for ECW, I thought maybe if they can't find anything for me, maybe I could do some kind of mask thing. And I always had some kind of ideas in the back burner. But it wasn't until right after ECW, I was doing an independent show in Chicago, and I got a tape, and it was the first time I ever saw Chris Daniels do the Curry Man. And I don't know how many people are familiar with the Curry Man, but I'm sure it was pretty popular after especially after he did it in TNA for a spell. But I was so blown away by how I thought it was awesome. I was like, I don't know why you ever wrestle as Chris Daniels. I think this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then when I saw it, I thought, I was like, you know what? And about a year later, I started playing around ideas. I came up with ideas to do some Sugar Mask thing. I came up with the Sugar Mask. It was kind of a playoff of that. And Stevie Richards, who is a really big guy, he's very tech savvy. He had all this instruments and equipment to do editing and videos. He wanted to start shooting videos, so we did a few YouTubes that Stevie had put up on and made a channel, Sugar Mask TV. And we just kind of played the character a little bit. I wound up actually getting him some bookings, and he actually did wrestle a few times in Maryland and some other places. So I do it here and there. If somebody wants me to do it, I do it. It could be a very fan-friendly thing, or it could be kind of an evil, crooked, almost like you don't know how to take him, Willy Wonka type. So that's pretty much the story behind the old Sugar Mask.
My next question is, well, going way back, how did you first become a fan of professional wrestling?
That just happened because I grew up, my mother would work a lot, and I would be with my great aunt, and she loved watching. She had like a small 13 inch like black and white TV back then, which I'm sure nobody would understand what that is now, but and we would watch it every Saturday, and we didn't get it was all WWE stuff, WWF as it were, stuff. It wasn't until I got into high school and stuff that I actually caught some other stuff, from stuff from the Omni and Global and stuff like that when it would come out. But growing up, every Saturday, that's what we'd do. We'd come over, we'd sit in front of our 13-inch black and white and watch whatever the Saturday Morning Superstars show was. And, that was like tradition. So, that's kind of how, we got into it, and going back to right around the Bob Backlund Hogan. Right when Hogan and the Sheik had their classic encounters, when I kind of jumped into it with both feet like everybody else.
So Hogan was he one of your favorites, or did you have any other favorites?
No, I just loved it. I hated him.
Oh,
I was the only person who hated Hulkamania. I hated it. The second I saw Randy Savage actually debut was when I fell in love with the wrestling. Fell in love with it. Like, wow, that guy is amazing. And I hated everything Hulkamania. I was like the only one. You gotta understand. Growing up, where I did New Jersey, I was I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan in a Giants world, and a Randy Savage fan in a Hulkamania universe. So I was against the machine way before it was popular.
You don't hear that a lot, especially from kids growing up in that era.
Yeah, it's a weird household, man. My father was a Steeler fan, my brother's a Bronco fan, I'm a Cowboy fan, WrestleMania, Hulkamania, I actually got in trouble in school grade school because I stayed up late to watch Randy Savage and Hogan from the Garden. And it was right when Hogan got his ribs broken by King Kong Bundy. Savage dropped the elbow on him, and Hogan kicked out of the elbow, and I screamed, you know, I screamed at the top of my lungs, I yelled BS at the top of my lungs, and I wasn't even supposed to be up, so my mother came in and took my TV away, so I still have heat with Hulk over that. if I ever get a chance, you know, for that. He got my TV taken away for a month with his kicking out of Macho's finish.
Damn you, Hulk Hogan. Okay, jumping forward a little bit. You trained at the ECW House of Hardcore. How did you find out about the school in the first place?
They started advertising on the show. I tell the story all the time. When I first started watching it, I was watching it, and I was always into athletics, and you know, when you're trying to break in, it's not like today, where it's like you can just, it's so easy to find a way to get in. But back then there was no internet, and I feel like I'm a dinosaur saying that. There was no internet. There was, nothing, not really many leads on how to find a way to get into wrestling. But, they had a segment on the early ECW show called Beulah Box, where you could write in the Beulah McGillicuddy and she'd answer your questions, love letters, whatever it was, stupid. So I was actually gonna write to see if I could figure out how a way to get into ECW, but apparently Beulah's Box was not open for me. So, right after that they started to advertise the House Hardcore School. My friend actually had the number. He got me the number off the TV show because I missed it. And I kid called up and went down. They actually set up a trial interview. So it wasn't like you just went in and signed up. They actually wanted to interview you, see if you could even, if they would even let you sign up. It was, that was the way it was. You wouldn't just go down and give money and you were in. You had to go down there, interview process with Taz and Terry Saturn, and then they would decide whether or not they would even let you sign up to go to the school.
Well, then, you got accepted, and then what was it like training with Saturn and Taz, having them as trainers?
How was it?
Yeah.
Oh, it was nuts.
I can imagine.
I think they had meetings before class to find out which one was going to make your life more miserable. Or who they, it's weird because I had, I've seen them both, fairly recently, and it's like two different animals, It's, two guys that I've seen now and the two guys that were there, but, they were trainers. They weren't there to be our friends. They weren't there to be anything else but, train wrestlers. And they weren't going to put their stamp on anybody that they didn't feel couldn't do anything or wasn't ready. That's why out of all the hundreds or possibly thousands of people that went there, only four of us technically graduated.
Well, between Saturn and Taz, what do you say either one of them had more of an influence on you in training, or what do you say both of them had equally as much of an influence on you?
I would say it's equal. I mean, Taz had more. Taz is more hands-on, like with our development. As far as getting in front of the crowd for Team Taz and having us, get in front of people like that and actually giving us some kind of a role so we feel comfortable once we got in front of people. But actually, he was also running, there was actually different classes. There was a night class and a day class, and I always make a day class. So for a while, I would say more than half my training actually came solo with Saturn, because Taz ran the night class and Saturn ran the day class, and I had no classmates. So, it was basically just one-on-one, me and Saturn for about 6 months of my training, which is about half of it. I did about 12 months training, but it was actually about 15, 16 months that I would go to the school at least once a week after I graduated, after I started wrestling full-time with the company. So I would say it's equal, but I said, hands-on as far as getting us more prepared for the crowds and stuff was Taz, but I spent actually more time training physically with Perry.
Well, okay, so after you graduated, you began in ECW in, 97, wrestling full-time for the promotion. You started out as a singles wrestler, but then I believe it was, in late 97 that you got paired up with Roadkill, as a tag team. So, how did that come about? I mean, what made them decide that you and Roadkill, were gonna make a good tag team in the first place?
Well, in the, we got into the, we got into, when we started, you know, we graduated, we actually got jobs, as, full-time ring crew. So, it was Spike, myself, Chris Chetty, Roadkill, Mikey Whipwreck, and, you know, a few other guys, and so we did full-time ring crew, so we got paid for that, and we got paid when we wrestled. So we didn't wrestle almost, we didn't wrestle every night, but, we wrestled, you know, when we did, we got extra money for it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a great living in the beginning, but, you know, what happened was before the shows, Tracy Smothers, who has been one of the really influential guy, figureheads in a lot of people's careers in ECW, because he would run, you know, he would show up to the buildings early and he would wait for us to finish the ring. And he would run training seminars every day before the shows, at least 2 hours, you know, of just training. So, you know, guys would do drills and we'd work on different things and he would show us different tricks that he had that he learned through the years, which was awesome. But there was also something called tryouts, and, they would bring guys in that were local or whatever that wanted to, a look or I guess the ECW is equivalent to a dark match, I guess it would be. And there was a couple guys, and, you know, we were all just having some, like, you know, freestyle matches in the ring, and I needed a partner. So his team, Roadkill, just jumped on the apron, and me and him started working against these two guys that were in town. We were just, you know, just wrestling a match, calling a ring, and Paul happened to be watching what was going on, and he thought there was a chemistry there, so he decided to pair us up. And at the time, Roadkill wasn't Amish. He was like a Louisiana backwoods, creek walking nut. I don't know how to explain what he was, but, and he wanted me to be almost like, Dirk Diggler from, Boogie Nights, which just had just come out. So we were, you know, I was gonna do that, and Roadkill was gonna be like my hired muscle, and then, you know, Al Snow saw Kingpin, and he said, he suggested that Roadkill should be Amish. And right when I was about to do my stick, Val Venus had come out. So instead of doing what I was supposed to be, Dirk Doring, I just became Danny Doring, and I was going to take elements of being kind of like a young, cocky womanizer to, you know, without doing the real porn element of it and having Roadkill as my yin and my yang, I guess. So that's kind of how it evolved. I mean, it just kind of kept evolving and just kept getting new wrinkles and this and that. So, I mean, you know, and eventually we tweaked it and made it our own, but that's pretty much how it all started. That's like kind of like, that's like the intermediate, not the short or the long version, but like the intermediate version of everything.
Do you prefer being in a tag team with Roadkill, or did you maybe prefer also doing singles matches on your own?
I like both. I like the challenges. The thing is, I've teamed with, you know, so many other guys, and you know, it's hard to team with people, and you gotta kind of find not a chemistry, but, you know, timing with that person and this, that, the next thing. So as much as I enjoy singles, teaming with Roadkill was always like riding a bike. Like we've done it so much, we've been around each other so much in and out of the ring that we just kind of know each other. So it's like, when I know I'm teaming with him, I know what we're getting into. I know what to expect. I know it's going to be easy because I know where he is and he knows where I'm going to be. It's like a familiarity that you kind of can't put a name to it. It just kind of is what it is. So, you know, teaming with him is like second nature. It's like driving or breathing. So, I mean, you know, when I'm in the ring with him, it's just really easy and comfortable. I just find being single is a little bit more challenging because you have nobody to rely on. You can't take those breathers, and, you know, it's just a little bit different. But do I have a preference? I mean, you know, no, I don't have a preference, but if I had to lean one way or the other, I would prefer to team, just because I had so many of, the best matches in my career with, with Roadkill. So to say, if I had a preference, I would definitely say the team, but as far as, I like the challenges that both present, for sure.
What were some of your favorite matches, memories, or feuds during your tenure in ECW?
I loved our matches with Nova and Chetty. I thought they were very difficult because Roadkill and Nova didn't get along great, and we kind of conflicted with a lot of ideas. But I think a lot of that conflict made for better matches. We just had a good chemistry with them. Obviously my favorite few would probably, I love working with the FBI. I mean, we worked with almost every incarnation of the FBI, except for the Guido JC Smith one. But Tracy and Guido, and Guido and Sal, Guido and Mama Luke. We even got assaulted by the very Italian one man gang when he was part of the FBI very briefly. So I mean, I loved working with them, and Guido's still one of my good friends to this day. And we get along. We are a special little bond too. So I mean, it's good. I mean, those two stand out in my head. But I mean, we had so many other memorable matches too, with CW and Bill Wiles, and Tommy and Raven was a big, big thing for us, then. So, I mean, there was a lot of stuff, but, I mean, the FBI, obviously, because we worked with them so many times, and then the Chetty and Nova stuff.
Well, now, going forward ahead, ECW closed the stores officially in 2001, January 2001. Did you, at the time, did you see the signs of it closing, or was it almost a complete shock to you?
I mean, it wasn't a shock to me, but early on, we went through a period of bouncing, of checks bouncing. I'd say around 98-ish. So when it started happening again, it wasn't like we loved that it was happening. Obviously, we didn't. But the guys that had been there for the first time, had a hope, I guess, or maybe a belief or hope or both, that we could weather that storm again. Like, it would just be one of those things where, there was something going on. Just believe in what we're doing, believe in who we have behind us, and we'll weather the storm together as a team. We were all kind of like, let's tackle this as a family and get through it. And the first time that happened, the second time, sadly, it did not. And, I think when it was falling apart, there were signs all around us, but it's almost like that love is blind. And, your wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever is cheating on you, and you kind of know it, but you refuse to believe it, kind of thing. I think deep down we knew it was coming to an end, but we thought that we could weather that storm, and unfortunately that just didn't happen.
And then 4 years later, 2005, ECW One Night Stand happened. At the time, did you think it was going to lead to anything bigger down the line, or did you just think that it was just a one-time show and just more of a for nostalgia purposes?
I think both. I think we thought at the time One Night Stand and One Night Stand. But I think some of us took it as a... it could be a spot to leapfrog into something else. I know I did. I was like, this could be the opportunity to show them who we are on a stage where they'll allow us to be who we are, one last time. When you get dark matches and stuff at WWE, it's not like you can really showcase your skill set or your personality, or you have such a small window to nail that and show them something that's so difficult to do, and the right people have to be watching, and that person's going to see something in what you're doing. So from that aspect, it could be frustrating and difficult, but that pay-per-view, we thought we all had a good shot to showcase how far we come, who we could be, and what we could offer them. So I thought it would be like a one-shot deal, but it turned into be, I think, a Like they did another one night stand, which I always call a sloppy second because you can't just have two, you know, whatever. But, you know, it just, it, you know, I didn't think it would be, as involved in bringing ECW back full time. I thought it was just a kind of a nostalgia pay-per-view as, you know, ECW. And then if it was successful, I think there'd be other opportunities. And we all thought that, we all thought and knew that it would be successful. But, I think it was one of the better pay-per-views they had that year, if I'm not mistaken.
And ever since One Night Stand, there's been a lot of ECW reunion shows popping up here and there, up in, you know, you had some in Canada, Shane Douglas ran his own during the time. Do you have an overall opinion on all these ECW reunion shows? Like, do you think it's all right for nostalgia purposes, or do you think it quickly jumped the shark after One Night Stand?
I think it jumped the shark, you know, a long time ago. That's not to say don't do them. I mean, it's actually a, you know, testament to what we accomplished as a company and a family, that people still want to have those shows and try to juice that, you know, juice that lemon for whatever they can get out of it. I think that they're going to keep happening, maybe not as frequently, I think, but they're still going to see them. And I'm scared it's going to get to a point where, literally, you're going to have, like, 50 years after Sandman passes away, and they play Enter Sandman, and somebody wheels out an urn with his ashes in it, and the place goes nuts. You know what I mean? I'm afraid it'll actually get to that point. But, I mean, you know, it's to a point now, it's you know, and I don't begrudge anybody for taking a payday or whatever, or doing it, but it's going to come to a point where it's just kind of sad to watch. It's not 2000. I mean, I'm one of the youngest guys, you know, that could do a reunion show, and I just turned 40. You know what I mean? So, you know, most of the guys are older, way older than I am. So, I mean, you know, if you can't, it's going to be hard to, you know, put on that kind of show for nostalgia purposes. But if they can, if those guys feel like they can do it and get the money from it, I don't begrudge anybody for taking the payday for it. It's just me, I just think it's kind of run its course. You know what I mean? And not to say that I wouldn't do one either if somebody offered me the right amount of money, but I don't jump on every opportunity that comes my way with it. I just think it's a little bit too much.
Yeah, I still can't believe TNA ran their own ECW reunion show in 2010. I thought at that point it was almost getting into the sad territory, but I agree with you. You know, if you're a former ECW guy and you have the opportunity to work a reunion show, get paid, why not, right?
Right, and if someone's offering money to do something, you're going to take the money, especially if you need the money. You know, a lot of these guys, they just still that they depend on their independent bookings and stuff like that, and hopefully it can lead to something else. But, you know, the One Night Stand in TNA, again, that was another pay-per-view they did, and if I'm not mistaken, it was one of their most successful pay-per-views. So, I mean, again, whether the guys can go or they can't go, or some of them can, or some of them, you know, like Tommy Dreamer is still does his thing. You know, Van Damme is ageless. You know what I mean? And, you know, there's guys that will always be able to do some stuff. There's just some guys that just physically just, I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say it, embarrassing. Embarrassing for me to watch and embarrassing to put that out in front of people who never saw ECW, and then that's what they think ECW was. And then, you know, in that respect, I think that's kind of what, you know, Vince would have liked to see is, you know, not the, you know, the guys thinking that it's some kind of just bunch of fossils hitting each other with, you know, brittle bones as opposed to what it was in its heyday. And I think the more and more you run those shows and more you run that risk of making it look, like a Bush League, like, you know, whatever. But I just think, you know, people, you know, let it live through the WWE Network. Is, you know, they have just, that just came out. If somebody wants to see ECW in its heyday, it's right there. Just put ECW in the search engine, and you can see all the guys, for the most part, in their prime, kicking ass and doing what they do. But I think just keep running these reunion shows is getting a little bit scary, and somebody's probably going to get hurt eventually. And by hurt, I don't mean a sprained ankle or a twisted fingernail. I mean seriously, seriously hurt.
No, I agree. I mean, you can only do a flaming table spot so many times where someone can actually get seriously injured for life.
Exactly.
And now, going back and going back a couple of years, let's talk about WWE's ECW revival on the Sci-Fi Network. Now, when you first heard about it, did you think at the time that it was a good idea and, again, it could lead to something bigger down the line? Or did you know from the get-go that maybe this isn't the best idea, especially looking back what it turned into, like, quickly on from the beginning?
I think the writing was on the wall very early with that, but from a big picture standpoint, I never thought that it would be three brands for however many years. I thought it would be a way to get your foot in the door. You get hired, you're on the WWE payroll, which is a big goal for everybody in the business, whether they want to say that they were NWA guy, WCW guy, whatever. You know, the goal in wrestling for guys who truly have goals in wrestling is to make it to WWE. And to get that contract is a big deal for a lot of people. But I think that being said, I think it was a way to get that and then try to politic, I guess is the best word, your way into something else. Because I don't think anybody that really, really had any kind of intelligence thought that ECW was going to be back full fold to what it was, and they were going to keep that around. I just don't. I think there's guys that hoped it would, and secretly, you know, fantasized that it would, but, you know, and then once we got there and started to see everything, our eyes opened up pretty quick. So, I mean, it was pretty obvious very early on to many of us that they were using it to phase out the old guard and bring in what they wanted, almost like a third way to introduce the developmental guys on TV before putting them up on a SmackDown or a Raw or something like that. And it was obvious very early on, for sure.
I mean, looking back at it, do you think the anything could have been done in order to make the ECW brand of WWE's a little bit more appealing to the ECW fans who were turning in and looking for the older ECW product?
Do I think there could have been a way?
Yeah. Could there have been a way?
Oh yeah. They could have put the writing of the show in the hands of people who were involved in the show originally. And, you know, and I'll say by that name, and I'll say one name, Tommy Dreamer, but you had their guys writing the show, and you know, they gave us the side entrance, which is like more gritty, and they try to go that route with it, but you're not going to capture what ECW was with, HD cameras and all the nuances that they had involved with it. If you wanted ECW, you had to have the guys that were involved in creating ECW, and to me, even Paul had his own agenda of where he wanted to be and where he wanted to go. So to me, the only person that could have made that happen was the man who was the true heart and soul of the product, and that was Tommy Dreamer.
No, I think that's an excellent point. Speaking of Tommy, what do you think of him running his own shows, House of Hardcore? I haven't seen any of them yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about them.
And I'm not saying this because I'm involved in this in the shows. They're amazing. What Tommy's doing is awesome. And although the name is based off of an ECW concept, House of Hardcore, it's anything but an ECW nostalgia show. Sure, there are some guys from ECW that, you know, rhinos and stuff that, you know, that people that always latch on to and want to see. But Tommy has taken it and making it something that we thought ECW was in its heyday. And what we thought that was, you know, every match topped the next match. You know, hardcore wrestling, as people think it is, isn't just broken tables, flaming tables, chairs, and barbed wire. Hardcore is for the hardcore fan who likes everything about wrestling, and that's what ECW was. You had hardcore matches, you had your balls and your axles and your Dudley Boys and your blood and your Sabus and your barbed wire, but then you had Tajiri and Super Crazies and Little Guidos and all these guys that could do technically stuff that I can't even pronounce, let alone think to perform. You had comic stuff, and you wrote other comic stuff. You had everything you could think of. You had Van Damme and Jerry Lynn, who who, if you've never seen him work in ECW, look this stuff up on YouTube. It's freaking amazing, the matches they had. To us, hardcore was all of that. And that's what Tommy's trying to do. He has, you know, guys like, you know, MVP and the Young Bucks, and he has London and Kendrick, and he's got all this stuff going on. It's like almost like a cornucopia of wrestling there. And it's not just old guys doing ECW stuff. It's everybody, everything. It's guys that people care about, and Terry Funk and all these guys. So it's all over the board, and it's got something for every wrestling fan. So if you're there, you're going to see your technical wrestling. You're going to see your stiff, strong style. You're going to see your hardcore stuff. You're going to see your the girls do stuff. Not just beautiful girls in the ring, but girls who can get down and dirty and work. And you got a little bit of everything for everybody. So what Tommy's doing is really special, and he's making it more special by not prostituting it out by doing it every month. He's doing maybe 2 to 3 shows a year, which is even better.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with the last point that it makes the shows even more special that he only does run them, like, twice a year, you know? Because if he was running them, like, 6 to 8 times a year or even going in the double digits, it might not seem as special anymore.
Exactly.
Now, getting back to yourself, your career. Now, over the years, you've only wrestled a handful of matches. Like, by my record, you only wrestled one match in 2013. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was for House of Hardcore. Do you consider yourself retired or semi-retired, or do you still like getting back in the ring every now and then to compete in a match?
No, I do about 5 to 10 shows a year. I've done 2 for House of Hardcore last year. I work for various NWA groups. I work upstate pro wrestling a lot, which is based out of Rochester, New York,
okay.
And some local stuff. So I do about, you know, the House of Hardcore is probably the biggest one on that radar, you know, that people are looking for me. But I'm still out there, you know. I have a very good full-time job right now, so, you know, when I'm using my vacation or my personal time is when I'm filling in my shows, and I'm trying to stay active and be a daddy and husband too at one, you know, at the same time. So it's a juggling act, but I still do about 5 to 10 shows a year. I've actually turned down quite a few shows coming up this summer because I'm expecting twins. So I mean, I probably turned down about 6 or 7 shows already. And I'm going to still do a handful, and I got about, between now and January, right now, about 5 or 6 shows on the docket. So it's just a matter of if I have any problems here with, you know, once the wife feels that she's got to go, daddy's got to go. So I mean, it's one of those things. If she's going to give birth, I'm going to be right there. So I kind of am making everything semi close to the house, but you know, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that ask for me and still ask for me in roadkill. I know the hardcore road trip in Canada had recently reached out to us, and it's one of those things that I just can't be away in during the pivotal times of a due date to take a weekend in Canada. So, I mean, if I can do it, I can do it, but I never use the word retired. I think the word retired in this business is a little overdone. I think everybody retires and it comes back like a month later. And personally, it really, really irritates me. You know, when wrestling retirements are like high school breakups, it's ridiculous. So
that's a good analogy.
To me, it's just one of those. When I'm done, I'm done. I'm not going to make a spectacle out of it. I'm not going to, you know, have a going away tour. You know, this is it. It's just really one of those things where I don't. If it's going to happen, I'm not even going to realize it's going to happen. It's just, you know, oh, I guess that was the last one. You know, I'm not going to make. Then you put too much stress onto it. It's too much build up, too much pressure on yourself. So to me, I'm just gonna, when I do them, I do them, and I work them as I feel I'm gonna work them at the time. And if it comes to a point where I don't get calls or booked anymore, or that's how it's gonna end. I'm gonna fade away instead of making some kind of internet announcement reunion tour. It's the same reason why I do. The Twitter handle is @SugarMask, because I don't feel like using the please remember me, ECW, at ECW Doring handle. I just think it's, a cry for attention, or, you know, please remember what I did. And to me, it's just, I'm not saying it's wrong for anybody else. It's just not who I am. And, you know, I have a high school varsity jacket too with a nice big letter on it, but if I wear it today, I'll get weird looks. You know what I mean?
No. I think I understand where you're coming from. But, like, let's say the opportunity arose later on that, like, let's say WWE or TNA offered you a full-time position, maybe not even as an active competitor, but even as, like, a road agent. Would you take the job if the chance came up?
I'm sorry, what was that last? I'm sorry, my kid was talking about my... What was that last question? I apologize.
Yeah. No, my question... if the opportunity came where WWE or ECW offered you a full-time position in the company, maybe not even as an active competitor, but, like, let's say as a road agent or anything like that, like, would you jump to the chance of a full-time position in one of those bigger companies?
I would love to. I mean, it's what I love. It's what I love to do. I've always loved it. I always wanted to be part of it, you know. I'm doing very well now, but I can't honestly sit here and tell you that as successful as I am in my next venture, that I love it. You know what I mean? I do it because it takes care of my family, and it's because what you have to do as a man or a family man, but I don't love what I do. I don't wake up every morning excited to go to the office. You know, when you're in a business, when I was full time, I loved getting up every day. I loved everything that came with it. So, if I had that opportunity, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Well, Danny, the last thing I want to do on the podcast is, I have been doing this a lot lately, it's Word Association, or I call it Juicy Association. What I do is I'm going to name off 8 names of guys and gals that you work with over the years. And when I say their name, I want you to think of the first word that pops in your head about them. And if you have a story about them, any kind of story, funny, crazy, you're allowed to tell it, or you're allowed to say anything else about them. That sound good to you?
Sure. Yeah. Just almost like a word association thing.
Yeah. Word association. Word juice association.
Or brief statement association.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So, if you're ready, I'm going to fire off some names at you.
I'm sorry?
If you're ready, I'll fire off some names at you.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. First name, Steven Richards.
I don't know what to say besides without coming out sarcastic or too crazy, but one of my best friends, one of my best friends in and out of the ring, had amazing matches with him. We go on vacation every year. Helps me with all my tech support problems.
Yeah.
Just all around, like, you know, one of those guys in wrestling that few people have anything negative to say about.
No, oh, yeah, I rarely hear anything negative about him. The next name I have is Joey Matthews.
Another great guy. Got to work with him very early on in his, well, I can't say his career, because when he got to ECW, he was already, I think, 5 or 6 years in. He started at a very young age, I think 18 even. I'm not sure how old he was, but I know that Roadkill and I were him and Chris New York's first pay-per-view match, I believe, Anarchy Rules. So we got to work with those guys. Great deal. Roadkill loved him, which says a lot, because Roadkill hated a lot of people, and he was instrumental in trying to help them get jobs at ECW to begin with. Just two good kids. Him and Chris New York, just really two good kids. And I'm happy that Joey's still doing his thing full time up there in developmental. So, he deserves it. He worked for it. He earned it. And God bless him.
Next name, Elektra.
See, a lot of people think that I dislike her or despise her. I don't. We had creative differences when we worked together, but I think that was about it. I think her and Roadkill had more, I don't know if it's creative or personal. It's not like personal, like, you know, hatred, but I think they had more of a tiff than anything. I preferred, I didn't, I thought once we had her, our thing was stale. I don't think we needed another girl at that time once Lita left. So I just didn't like where we were going in that creatively with that whole thing, but personally I had nothing against her whatsoever.
Well, the next name was, Lita.
Yeah, I get to work with her when she was breaking, when she was in ECW. She was in our road clique. She traveled with me and Roadkill and Chetty and everybody, and she was just like one of the guys. I mean, we were pretty tight, pretty cool friends, and she worked hard to get to where she was, and she did great up there. Obviously, she's still in the Hall of Fame, but, as anything else, once you not around each other, a lot of times people kind of drift apart as far as keeping in touch with, texts and phone calls and stuff, and she had her life lived, so we just kind of, I haven't talked to her in years, but, loved working with her. I thought her, Roadkill, and I had, awesome chemistry when we were together, and I think it's amazing what she was able to accomplish afterward.
Tony Mamaluke.
What's that?
Tony Mamaluke.
Jeez. I don't even know where to begin with that guy. I've seen him personally take two or three bumps that I thought would have killed a normal man. I have no idea how he's alive. He is, he must have nine lives. He must be part cat. I think he's a very underrated wrestler, and I think that he would have been perfect to do something bigger on a much bigger scale. I think he was just, he has a lot. He's one of those guys that has, if his body was the size of his heart, he would be Kevin Nash. He's amazing. He's very passionate, and very knowledgeable about the business. So I have nothing but good things to say about that kid. Nothing but good things. I can't even call him a kid anymore.
Yeah.
We're all old men now, but whatever.
Next name, Simon Diamond.
A HW fun fact that people may or may not know. Me, Big Sal, Dawn Marie, and Simon Diamond all live in the same town. Saw Pat a lot. We went to the same gym. Saw him a lot more than people would think. He's very knowledgeable when it comes to any sports, especially and particularly Notre Dame football and the Yankees. Just a good dude, man. He's a good all-around dude. I like being around him, and I think I still actually bump into him at least twice a month at the local grocery mart, believe it or not, so we're still in the same town.
Okay, that's nice to hear. Yeah, no, I was a fan of Diamond and Swinger. I thought they were criminally underrated as a tag team.
I agree.
Yeah. Next name, Rhino.
Another good dude. I got to work with him more in WWE than I did in ECW. I worked with him on a few SmackDowns, a few Velocities. He a couple times. I think I worked with him six times in WWE and worked with him like three times in ECW. But it's very easy to work with, very easy to call a match with. Not to expose too much, but I think his out-of-ring character is so soft-spoken. His appearance, as opposed to his in-ring character, it's almost shocking how much different they are. But again, another great guy, just very easy to get along with, very, very hard to say anything negative about him whatsoever.
And, the last name I have, it might be a little bit of a curveball, CM Punk.
I wouldn't say that we're, I know him. I had a pretty good little relationship with him. We worked in ECW, WWE, ECW, some dark matches, and I think one TV. Although he's not in my speed dial, I think he's, what he's been able to do is somebody had to be that guy to be WWE's tough guy, and a lot of people either love him or hate him, but you have to appreciate that somebody who's passionate about the wrestling business as it pertains to, loving the business, not trying to use it as a stepping stone. You have to appreciate and be happy for it. And, where he's at right now, I don't know, but I think that if you ask some people, he overachieved. If you ask other people, they would say he achieved exactly what he should have. I said, and then if you ask him, he'd probably say that he underachieved because he didn't get that top WrestleMania spot, and you got to appreciate that kind of perseverance and that kind of hunger and desire. So, I mean, you know, whether you love him or hate him, you got to, you know, that's the way I see it, and you got to respect that. So, I mean, you know, whether he comes back or not, I just want to be able to play Living Color on my DVD, my CD player in my car with the windows down without people looking at me. But, you know, that might be too late for that at this point.
No, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, so, in your opinion, do you think he made, like, the right moral decision to, like, just leave WWE in a heartbeat like that, or do you think he should have thought it over more?
I treat it like a wrestling retirement. I think everybody's reaction to it was knee jerk. I think he's taking a couple weeks off because he's hurt. That's, you know, whether it be mentally worn out, physically worn out, I don't think he's going anywhere. I just think people knee jerk reaction to that real quick. People do that way too much. I just don't see it. If you've seen the last of him, I'd be willing to bet my deed in my house that he's probably going to be seen relatively soon. And I have no inside information, by the way. So.
I understand. But, yeah, you know, Raw's in Chicago tomorrow, and, you know, there's a lot of rumors going around that he's going to return, or fans are even trying to hijack the show in, like, protests of him leaving. It's crazy right now with them.
Yeah.
Danny, thank you so much for coming on to the show. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. Is there anything you would like to say to end the show? Anything you'd like to plug? You know, you have your Twitter. Any shows coming up for you where people can find you? Anything you'd like to say at all?
Yeah, no, just a Twitter handle, probably, because that's, you know, if anything that's going to be announced, I'll just do it right there at Sugar Mask, and anything that needs to come up is where we'll go.
Okay, that's fair enough. Once again, pleasure to talk to you. It was real insightful to hear your stories from ECW and beyond. And I wish nothing but the best for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on. And thank you all for listening to another episode of The Juicy Details.
All right.